I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Kelsey Atherton.
Okay.
Kelsey Atherton.
Okay.
And it's all right if I record this call?
Yes.
Excellent.
Can you hear me all right? I got my phone on speaker. I can take it off the speaker if it's... I'm sorry, say again?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, great.
Well, excellent. So I hear there's some interesting technology demonstrations happening.
We have a number of technologies out here at Advanced Warfighting Experiment here in RIMPAC, here as part of the Rim of the Pacific exercise with LS-3, our leg squad support system, being one of the systems that we're out here assessing as part of our Advanced Warfighting Experiment.
Excellent. I just spoke a few minutes ago to Major Christopher Orlowski about the LS-3 on the technical side of it, but I'm really curious in how you guys are, what you're going to have it do, how is it going to work with moving pieces of things?
I'll give you a little bit of background on our advanced warfighting experiment. The experiment is focused on a special MAGTAF, or we call it a SP MAGTAF. Special Marine Air Ground Task Force, and that Special Marine Corps or Special MAGTAF is embarking or employing company landing teams. The company landing teams are oriented around a Marine Corps infantry company. And they'll be deploying them throughout the Hawaiian Islands here. We'll have two infantry company landing teams and one HIMARS or artillery landing team that'll be coming on the islands from the sea. So as the Marines come off of ship via Osprey or via Amtrak's and LCAC's, as they come ashore, one of the main focuses that we have during our AWE, or Advanced Warfighting Experiment, is once they get ashore, those Marines come onshore with supplies in order to sustain themselves for a limited amount of time. And as they move and maneuver throughout the ranges that we've got here for the exercises, they carry quite a bit of those supplies. So as the companies are moving throughout their maneuver areas, the Marines have a considerable load, personal load that they need to carry, from water to chow to ammunition. That each Marine needs to carry with them in order to sustain themselves. And obviously, working in a warm climate like the Pacific, they go through a lot of water pretty quickly. They can go through a lot of chow. So as they're maneuvering, we try to look at different ways that we can reduce the amount of equipment and amount of supplies that each Marine needs to carry in order to sustain them for an extended period while they're in their objective area. So that's where the LS-3 comes into play is, I think you've been briefed by our DARPA reps on on the technical, performance capabilities of the LS-3. What we're doing with it is we're loading that up. Instead of having Marines, no kidding, put a bunch of equipment and a bunch of supplies in a rucksack and carry that around, as individuals, we're offloading that so that the Marines don't have to carry as much, and we're loading that onto the LS-3. So the LS-3 will be carrying about a squad. A squad is about 7 to 9 Marines. The LS-3 will be carrying a squad of Marines supplies. So it'll be carrying the additional water and chow or food, MREs, and ammunition to help those Marines. We call that, we refer that to as lighten the load, so that the Marines don't have to carry as much as they're maneuvering throughout throughout their battle space. What's unique about the LS-3, you know, normally we would take additional supplies and put it on a vehicle and be able to get it around and distribute it around to those companies as they're in their objective area. What's unique about the LS-3 is being the size that it is, it can maneuver with those companies, you know, down to the platoon and squad level. It can maneuver with them over terrain that you couldn't necessarily get a wheeled or tracked vehicle through, just due to the density of trees and the kind of terrain that would be difficult to cross with a wheeled or a small tracked vehicle. So the LS-3 lets us go ahead and embed it with a squad, so it can go out on a patrol and carry those supplies for those Marines as they maneuver throughout the battle space.
Excellent. So the maneuverability, that greater maneuverability seems to be that's big, right? Companies don't, or squads don't usually move through terrain like this for long times, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Well, they'll normally set up different waypoints that they'll move, you know, as they're out on a patrol. They'll pick out their patrol route. So they'll move from one waypoint to the next. Whether that waypoint or that next waypoint is accessible with a vehicle or not, you know, they may have a waypoint that cuts them through small trails that you can't really get a vehicle to through, or might be maneuvering to a point to where they're going to hold at that they can't get a vehicle to out to them to resupply. So, you know, with the LS-3, being able to maneuver on, you know, small trails and to some extent through not too densely, too dense of foliage in the woods, but, you know, to some extent through woods, that lets the Marines that are maneuvering bring that LS-3 and trail to follow them directly to their next waypoint and potentially to a holding point where they would, set up for a little bit and then have their supplies carried by it. And again, in areas that you wouldn't necessarily be able to get a vehicle, a regular, you know, a Humvee or other types of vehicles where that smaller squad would be.
Excellent. And is this the first time the Marines are, I guess, trying out the LS-3?
No, we've had opportunity to work with the LS-3 previously in different environments. We've gone up to Boston Dynamics up in that area, gone to a military range there. Of course, totally different environmentals as far as the kind of terrain that they were employing it. And it wasn't really what they did during that evolution wasn't really a tactical exercise. It was really more familiarization with the capabilities and limitations of the LS-3. So we had a squad of Marines that took it out, looked at what they could do with it as far as how they could load the LS-3, how much equipment they could get on it, and how they could configure it to be strapped onto the LS-3. And then also we use a controller called the Tactical Robotic Controller, or we call it a TRC. How to use that TRC and kind of get a good feel for how they could employ it. But, you know, that's a considerably different environment here in Hawaii where we're at. It's definitely going to face a lot more challenging terrain, definitely different soil conditions than what it's seen in the past. You know, LS3 has been employed in quite a few different locations throughout the states. We've had it out in desert environment, out in wooded environments up in the Northeast. And, you know, Army's worked with it in a variety of other places. So this will present it the kind of terrain and the kind of challenges that we would expect to see, you know, in the Pacific Theater, where you've got, you know, really soft soil conditions, a lot of vegetation that can be challenging to get through and maneuver around. So, and this will be really, for the Marine Corps, really the first opportunity for us to actually put it into an exercise and provide it to a force that's actually exercising the same way they would if they were conducting actual operations. So they'll have it embedded with them for 3 days that they're maneuvering throughout their battle space, using the LS3 to assist, you know, to lighten that load of the Marines that are maneuvering, and also to go back and help gather resupplies. You know, from a main resupply point and bring it back out forward for those maneuver forces as they're moving to objectives.
Gotcha. How many LS3s are going to partake in this exercise?
Yeah, we brought a total of three of the LS3s. We will employ... right now our plan is to employ one LS3 at a time. That gives us two that, you know, if it goes forward and we break one or we, you know, have any kind of malfunction, they can quickly evac that one out, get a new one in, and the Marines can continue to exercise with it. So it kind of gives us a good rotation to let our Boston Dynamics crew go ahead and rotate out, make sure the vehicle's ready to go out on its next mission and be able to swap those out if we have any problems with any of the vehicles as they're forward. So it's a total of three, but employing one LS3 at any given time.
Gotcha. And it's just going with one squad?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Will the squad be landing with the L3? Will it come with them by way of Osprey or landing craft, or will they get it another time?
We're going to have them, they're going to come in up at the Kahuku training area up on the northern part of the island. So the company landing team will insert via MV-22 Osprey. And once they land, we'll mate them up with the LS3, we wanted to try to get have the Marines come in and embark with the LS3 aboard the MV-22, but we were really kind of limited in lift space, you know, the amount of cargo area to try and get all the Marines in and bring a lot of equipment in. So we really had to limit the equipment that we were embarking on the Osprey pretty much to just the Marines. So they'll land at their landing zone up in the Kahuku training area, or KTA, and once they hit the deck there, they'll mate up and we'll hand off one of the LS3s for them to begin their mission.
Gotcha. Well, that's exciting. That is exciting. Is that
one of the main objectives for our advanced warfighting experiment? We have five primary objectives that the Futures Directorate, which is what I'm part the organization that I'm part of. One of our primary objectives being out here in Hawaii and working with those distributed company landing teams. Again, that'll be those three different landing teams at distributed sites, so they're, you know, not co-located, is to be able to assess the logistics requirements of those three distributed company landing teams, because that's a very difficult thing to do when you have those companies that are not in one central location and being able to provide the resupply that they'll need, not just the resupply to a central point, but the resupply that goes to that central point, you know, wherever the CLT is, and then be able to be distributed wherever the maneuver forces are once they get those supplies forward. So that's a major objective of the Futures Directorate as we're out here conducting our AWE as part of the RIMPAC. And that's one the primary objective that we'll be looking at. You know, LS3 will be one of the contributing technologies that we look at as a means to help assist supporting those logistics requirements.
Gotcha. Well, I have here a list of a few other technologies. Would you be okay speaking to them?
Sure, if you'd like to hear them. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting out on the beach. I took a little break in my car here. I'm looking over right now. We have another one called the UHAC, ultra-heavy air cushion craft. Hold on one second, if you would, please. I'm sorry, it's the UHAC, ultra-heavy amphibious connector.
Gotcha.
So, are you familiar with that one at all?
I have three paragraphs on a pamphlet in front of me.
Okay, good. Well, the UHAC, so do you have a picture of it? Because it's a little bit hard to describe.
I have a picture.
You know.
You don't have to worry about that.
Okay, good. I won't try to describe what I'm seeing crawling across the beach right now, but that's another one that we're experimenting with, looking at different means. You know, when I talked about that logistics resupply, you know, part of one of the main Marine Corps concepts as we face the future environment. This is embedded within a Marine Corps concept document called Expeditionary Force 21, is looking at different means in which we can move supplies and Marines from ship to shore. So we call that a ship-to-shore connector. So the UHAC, the ultra-heavy lift amphibious connector, is one of the technologies that we're taking a look at to be able to go out embark aboard a ship within the well deck of a ship, loaded up with equipment, carry that equipment from the ship to the beach. And what's really really unique about the UHAC is I'm watching it crawl across terrain right now that would normally be impossible to try to get some of our current ship-to-shore connectors across, like, for example, a landing cushion LCAC vehicle. The terrain that we're crossing today with the UHAC would be preclusive to try to get LCAC across. It would need something. It would need a beach area that is considerably flatter. But with what we've got with the UHAC here today, I'm watching it crawl across the probably 8-foot-high sand dune berms that it's encountering as it comes up across the beach. And, you know, most beaches will have some kind of berm area that can be very difficult to cross, whether you're in a wheeled vehicle or a tracked vehicle. And I've watched the UHAC cross this pretty comfortably already once, and it's going to go back and run it again. So that's another one of the technologies that we're experimenting with out here is the UHAC and its ability to gather supplies or load up supplies on a ship, move to shore, and then be able to transition to a point once it gets on shore where that equipment can be offloaded on a surface. You know, that if it's a vehicle, for example, we'll be embarking internally transported vehicle, a small four-wheel drive vehicle in the back of the UHAC. We'll transport that here onto the beach, get it across that rugged terrain that small four-wheel drive might have a difficult time making it across some of the beach area, and get it into a firmer soil conditions where we can go ahead and offload that vehicle and it can take off and do its mission. So that's a unique capability that we have out here at our AWE. And another one we're looking at as a future concept for ship-to-shore connectors and just looking at technologies that let you get in areas that some of the systems today might not be able to, terrain that you might not be able to cross. So that's the UHAC out here. If you're interested, I can talk to you regarding some of the other technologies, or if you have any questions on UHAC, feel free.
And just as the main one is this goes, I can see those trends. Can it both swim and crawl on beach? Is that?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It moves over the water. It's kind of like the big captive air cell pads that you can see, or the tracks that you can see. Those are big, flotation cushions. So those paddle it through the water like a paddle wheel. So we're working with what the company. And this is actually an ONR project that the Futures Directorate linked up with ONR, who's one of our close partners in a lot of the technologies that we work. We went linked up with ONR to get this UHAC out to our exercise. So, yeah, it moves across the water. It's got about a 4-knot speed over water. And then I'm not really too familiar with its land speed. But again, the unique thing about the UHAC is its ability to cross terrain that would normally be challenging for most of our ship-to-shore connectors and some of our ground vehicles.
Gotcha. That's really neat. So the other one that strikes me as particularly interesting to popular science readers is the ground unmanned support surrogate.
Yes, our GUS, that's right. Our GUS, what we did, we work with quite a few different robotics and autonomous systems within the Futures Directorate, and our GUS is one of those systems. Historically, we've worked with some different Virginia Tech to help us outfit a variety. We've used historically used Polaris vehicles that we've outfitted autonomous systems onto that vehicle and used that in the past. What's new and unique with the GUS is we took a fielded vehicle, which is, if you've got a picture of that small vehicle, that's the internally transportable vehicle, or ITV, Marine Corps Growler. That's fielded out to our operating forces right now. So we took that equipment suite that we've worked with in the past and went ahead and had our Virginia Tech folks go ahead and work with them to transfer that equipment suite that gives it the autonomous capability over to that Growler. And that lets our Marines go ahead and use that vehicle now in an autonomous mode. So once again, that vehicle uses the same. I spoke about that TRC or tactical robotic controller that we're using with the LS3. That same controller is used to control our GUS. So that gives the Marines the capability to load that vehicle up, and if they have it loaded, and that it'll be used as a logistics resupply, again addressing that AWE objective to assess our logistics requirements and support and lighten the load. Use that GUS, load it out with equipment, and the GUS can travel gravel roads or some difficult terrain. Basically, the maneuverability of it is pretty much dictated by the platform, by the ITV Growler platform itself. be able to maneuver that vehicle, give it waypoints so it follows the trail. The Marines can do with the TRC control of that. The Marines can then not have to be on that vehicle. Say, for example, if they had a wood line next to a gravel road or next to a road, they can offset so that the Marines don't have to necessarily be right there with the vehicle, to provide protection of their equipment as they escort it to and from as they're conducting the logistics resupplies. So that's a pretty interesting vehicle. We've had that out in some experiments before, but this will be the first employment of that particular vehicle in a major exercise like we're conducting here at the AWE. So it'll be another vehicle that'll be up in the Kahuku training area, running through some pretty challenging terrain up there, employed with the company landing team that comes in the zone up there conducting autonomous resupply.
Gotcha. Well, that's really neat. I think that those three really cover what the immediate things I want to get our readers interested in. Just so I have it in writing and don't forget, could you title and name or rank and...
My name is Lieutenant Colonel Don Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you for your time.
Sure thing. Thanks.